This week on Behind the Lens, we'll break down a new proposal to curb short-term rentals in New Orleans. There's a new call for a federal investigation of Entergy New Orleans, and teachers at a failing charter school will have to reapply for their jobs. I'm Tom Wright. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
A New Orleans councilwoman has put forward a plan to cut back on short-term rentals that have popped up across the city in recent years. Kristen Palmer says her proposal is an effort to protect the integrity of city neighborhoods. Firms like Airbnb say this was crafted in a back room without input from key stakeholders. Michael Isaac Stein spoke with us Friday to explain the plan.
If these proposals went through, the only people that could have a residential short-term rental would need to have a homestead exemption, and they would need to stay on the property while they had guests present. So basically, this takes away whole home rentals on single-unit properties. To get into a little more detail, so the owner would need to have a homestead exemption for that property. And then on that property, the owner could have up to three permits. So basically what this does is if you have a fourplex, for example, three of those units could be used for short-term rentals, but you would need to stay in one of them. Same goes for a double shotgun, for example. You could rent out one side, but not the other.
So the idea there is, with the homestead exemption, is to establish that the resident is a permanent resident of the building and not just coming in for commercial purposes.
That's right. I mean, the biggest criticism throughout this debate has been about out-of-town speculators who come into, you know, the 7th Ward, Treme, Central City, and buy up dozens of homes to kind of operate these scattered hotels. So what this does is it keeps it within New Orleans, and it also precludes anyone from buying, you know, multiple homes in neighborhoods to operate as short-term rentals.
Okay. What about commercial short-term rentals?
So this is where it gets a little more complicated. There would be three types of commercial permits under the new proposal. The first is a single-unit commercial, and this would more or less act like the residential permit. It would just be for one unit. For someone who happened to be living in a commercially zoned district, you would still need the homestead exemption. The second category is small-scale commercial. So here you're thinking about buildings maybe in the on Magazine Street, for example, where the first floor is commercial, but then there are apartments above. So this applies to any building with four units or less in a commercially or mixed zone district. And basically what the rules say there is that you can use all of those units in a small-scale commercial building as short-term rentals as long as you keep the first floor open to commercial use. The third category of commercial permit is the large scale. So this is those big condo units in the CBD, for example. The rules there is that those buildings, so that's five units or more, they could use 30% or less for short-term rentals. And for every short-term rental they operate, they would need to add one unit of affordable housing.
And I understand there is also a call for increased nightly fees that the city charges. Explain that if you would.
That's correct. Yeah, there'd be increased charges, and we're not sure how much nightly charges for short-term rental stays, part of which would go into a fund to pay for affordable housing projects. It should also be noted that the plan maintains the complete ban of short-term rentals in the French Quarter and also extends that ban into the Garden District.
Okay. How does Councilwoman Palmer's proposal here differ from earlier recommendations on this issue with the City Council?
One of the landmark recommendations here would be the City Planning Commission study that came out in September, was approved in October. On the residential side, this proposal more or less matches up with what the City Planning Commission recommended. On the commercial side, Palmer's plan is less restrictive than the City Planning Commission. So The main thing here is that small-scale commercial category. This is where we see the most room for expansion of short-term rentals under Palmer's plan, because there is no limit on the amount of short-term rentals you can have in each of these small-scale commercial buildings.
What about reactions from some of the major short-term rental platforms? Airbnb comes to mind. HomeAway, I believe, is another one.
Yeah. So within minutes of the announcement from Palmer's office, we started getting emails from these platforms, and they had already dubbed the term the Palmer ban to refer to this motion. They're not pleased, as one can predict, although the exact problems they have with the plan still remains unclear. It seems like a general complaint that there's more restrictions. On the other side of the coin, short-term rental critics were at least partially encouraged by the plan. I think a lot were very encouraged by the homestead exemption requirement in residential districts. Like I said, there is a concern about the small-scale commercial category and what that could do to certain parts of the city. There's also a concern about enforcement. We spoke to Breon Dedecker from Jane Place, and she basically said all of these proposals are great, but if you don't have a way to stop these platforms from listing illegal Airbnbs, it won't have an impact. We talked to Councilmember Palmer about it. She said that, you know, she agreed that enforcement is going to be a big part of any short-term rental plan. And she said that those proposals, we should be seeing them in January to, you know, she said she's working right now on a conducive enforcement policy.
Right. So what's this is right now just a proposal. What is next for this initiative?
It's going to be considered this Thursday. Even if it is passed, it would take another 3 or 4 months for these changes to actually take place. So this motion would send the proposal back to the City Planning Commission. City Planning Commission would then have to hold a hearing, make recommendations, and then approve those recommendations, which would go back to City Council. And then only then could City Council start passing the ordinance necessary to actually change the comprehensive zoning ordinance permanently.
So that vote expected the 20th, you say, the Thursday?
That's right.
Okay. Michael also has an update on Entergy New Orleans and a new call for a federal probe of its charitable foundation. It follows a council lobbying effort by the utility, drafting some of its charitable recipients.
The complaint, yet again, revolves around Entergy's campaign to build a new power plant in New Orleans East. The groups that filed the complaint, that coalition was the main opposition to the power plant from day one. But this newest complaint concerns how Entergy was using its charitable giving to try and lobby for the new power plant. So the complaint has been sent to the Treasury Department, to a part of the Treasury Department that basically acts as an independent audit and investigatory wing of the IRS. The complaint is asking these auditors to look at the Entergy Charitable Foundation to see if they were illegally lobbying City Council to further Entergy's for-profit motivation. So we had previously reported on how Entergy had asked its charitable beneficiaries to come to City Council meetings and speak in their favor during power plant hearings. Recently, we wrote a story that outlined how Entergy was yet again calling on their charitable beneficiaries to lobby City Council. This time, they were trying to avoid a $5 million fine that City Council is considering for their role in the paid actor scheme.
What were these beneficiaries actually saying to the council members in this alleged lobbying effort?
It varied a bit. In the beginning, it was a lot of these charitable foundations or these charitable beneficiaries coming to City Council and actually testifying in their favor. We saw evidence that Entergy was actually writing scripts for some of these charitable organizations. More recently, It just took the form of letter writing, and in the letters and in the hearings more generally, they mostly just talk about how Entergy is a good community partner. They tend to stay away from the actual debate that's going on. During this most recent letter writing campaign, we heard from one of these organizations that when the Entergy rep reached out, she didn't really explain what the letter writing campaign was connected to. And it should be noted that in every one of these cases that we've seen, the Entergy employee that's reaching out to these organizations has been an employee that directly oversees Entergy's charitable giving.
Take it, we're not hearing a lot more explanation from Entergy at this point as to this campaign, but have we heard anything from city council members? Is there anything to suggest their views have been changed following this these correspondences?
Not yet. City Council and Entergy both be seeming to sit tight for right now. By the end of the month, City Council is going to make a final decision about the $5 million fine, as well as a potential revote on the power plant. So for right now, both are staying pretty quiet.
Michael Isaacstein, covering yet another busy week at City Hall. Thank you very much.
No problem.
In education news, the Lens confirms that teachers at Harney Academy will have to reapply for their jobs. This comes as the Orleans Parish School District prepares to take over that failing charter school. Marta Jusen has the latest.
We have confirmed that teachers at Harney will have to reapply for their jobs, and actually all staff at Harney will have to do that if there is a job for them. So the district has listed positions, and teachers and staff members can check them out online. We also learned that they began interviewing this week. So we don't know how many people have been interviewed or anything like that, but we do know that interviews started this week. This is all in preparation for the January handoff of the school from the charter organization Spirit of Excellence to the district. You know, I think the really tough thing here is that these teachers have a really hard job to do. They already had a tough job closing out of school over its last year, because the district had decided that the school would close at the end of the year no matter what. Now that the charter is being revoked and the charter board decided to hand in their charter just to make that process go faster, now teachers are having to reapply for their jobs. And not only that, but there's not a lot of reprieve here. It's going to be a six-month job at the longest, and it's going to be at a school that they know is closing.
Okay. Marta, remind me first, Harney is in a lot of trouble, clearly having to surrender its charter. What was the problem with Harney in the first place?
We'd seen financial issues kind of bubble up over the last couple years. They had some trouble when they were with the RSD, and then more trouble when they were with the district. We discovered that they hadn't paid retirement contributions on time and that they'd improperly withheld that money from employees. And that's just one example of a few different management issues they had had. They'd had non-compliance in special education and other areas as well. Okay. And then the district really came in and said, this is,
right,
this is over.
And all of those criticisms of Harney Charter, what indication did we get that the teachers were part of the problem here? Is this simply some OPSB policy that they have to reapply for their jobs?
Parents and teachers have told us that district leaders said that the problem really rested with the board and not with the staff of the school. But when they make that transition back to the district does have to rehire employees. They can't simply take on.
And teachers and the rest of the staff, from custodial to all the way to some of the higher, right. Looking at your reporting on these teacher job applications, I notice on the district's website, you're looking at least 18 positions for the school. We know there are many more staff at the school. Those postings include principal, business manager, data manager, and a dean of students. And there is a single listing for an elementary teacher at Harney.
Right. We're presuming that they, you know, want to get a bunch of applications there so they can fill the teaching staff back up. And in the past, they'd had over 40 employees. So unclear exactly how many teachers they're going to be hiring, but.
Okay. And it mentions on the job site that elementary teacher position will pay a quote, appropriate teacher salary, end quote. Do we have any indication what an appropriate teacher salary might be in New Orleans?
We know that the district starts teachers at about $42,000 a year, and that increases incrementally with each year of experience, and their pay scale goes up to 23 years of experience, and you'd be making $63,000 if you had that much experience.
Okay. And it's clear that one person who is not having to reapply for his role is the board president, Reverend Charles Southall.
Correct. I don't know if he'll, you know, kind of try and stay in touch with the school or do any volunteering or anything like that, but his official capacity as the board president will end when they turn in their charter.
Okay. And right now the outlook for the handover is for it to take place sometime middle January.
Yeah, they've said mid-January, but they have not confirmed a date. And so the reason that date is important is that would likely be the last day of employment for Harney teachers. And they would need to do that rollover, you know, presumably on a weekend or something so that they'd have teachers on the Monday. Students don't need to do anything. They'll be enrolled. That should be a fairly seamless transition as far as enrollment goes. But they do need to start looking for a new school for next school year because the school will close at the end of the school year.
All right. Marta Jusen with Education Reporting for The Lens. Thank you very much.
You bet.
A couple of items to tell you about in the Lens Opinion section this week. Urban planner Karen Blair writes on food insecurity in New Orleans. She cites recent data that show 87,000 New Orleanians, about 23%, have trouble getting food on the table on a regular basis. And the Reverend William Barnwell ponders what it will take to break what he calls the poisonous divide in our politics, locally and nationally. Find those columns and more online at thelensnoaa.org. That's all for this week. Next Friday, we'll have our year's end edition of the podcast. I hope you'll listen for a recap of some of our most impactful reporting of 2018. Remember, though, we can't tell these stories without the support of readers and listeners like you. From now through December 31st, NewsMatch will match your new monthly donation each month of next year, or they'll double your one-time gift, all up to $1,000. Please give today and support your nonprofit news team. I'm Tom Wright. We thank you for getting behind the lens.